Sure, other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Thursday, April 24th. Hi, Charlotte.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, good. You're always in the bright colors. I really appreciate that. Where I come in black usually.
It's funny because I usually wear dark colors, but I guess true. I've been wearing bright colors these days.
You're feeling summery, huh?
Yeah, I guess I am. How was last night?
Oh, last night was great. We launched a new station, Radio Temptation, and it was a lot of fun. You know, I mean, I was extremely stressed out because, you know, last minute things, technical things and stuff. And I'm like totally like running around like a chicken with its head cut off.
Right.
And but the show was great. There were like three women there. And all beautiful and funny and stuff. And they just talked about things, you know, about their lives, about the work and things like that. And it's fascinating to me, you know, when you listen to porn stars and how their lives are. I mean, one of them actually has four kids and she's a mom. You would never tell. I mean, she's not considered like, you know, the older niche and something like that. Because there's like niches in it and stuff in adult entertainment.
Right.
So, you know, they have like older women and things like that. But she's no older woman. I mean, she's pretty young. But she's got four kids and you'd never think that she, you know, actually does this on video. So,
and a lot of people that have, I mean, I don't know how people with four kids can look so great.
I know.
I have my friend, I mean, firstly, I would think she was 23 and she's 35.
Wow.
And she has three children and I'm like, girl, how do you look so good?
Right.
Like, my stomach doesn't look like that and I haven't had kids.
Oh, God.
So sometimes when, like, you see beautiful women with great bodies, you're just like, how have you, like, had kids?
Right. I know. And so it's amazing, you know. And not only that, but, you know, just where their mind is, you know. I mean, the thing is that you've got kids and stuff, and they're able to separate their lives completely, you know.
Definitely.
To me, that's fascinating. I don't know how they can do that, but they do, you know.
Yeah,
and
sure.
But the common denominator for them is they all are free and they love sex and stuff. And it's different, you know. So it's fun to talk to them and stuff. And they're real people, normal people like us. In fact, they're most of the people I've met in the industry so far, and I'm pretty new, is extremely nice people, extremely nice and warm people. So, you know, I mean, we just...
That's cool.
Yeah, we just jump to conclusions and call them all whores and stuff, which maybe they are.
But people do. People,
I mean,
judge too much and
when
they don't know. That's in general in life. People judge before they know
people
anything
do.
About.
People do, you know. But at any rate, but the fun part of it was doing the video part. I don't know if you got a chance to watch it at all, but it's running, you know, on a loop, on our stream and stuff. And we have more shows coming tonight and every day after that. So
I didn't get a chance last night because I was on the red carpet, but I'm definitely going to watch.
Yeah, just watch
sure.
5 minutes of it just to get a you know, a gist of it and stuff. It's pretty cool, actually. So we did that, and everything looks great. You know, I mean, I always picture things in, like, really professional ways and polished ways, you know. So I created sort of a virtual set and all that stuff. You'll have to come
it's
and
great.
See the studio.
I would really love to.
You know, so yeah, so that's that. And you know, when people come in and they listen and they get on the chat room and they call in and stuff, it's a great feeling, you know.
Very cool.
Yeah,
definitely.
So and good programming too, I think, compared to what's out there.
Yeah, I have no doubt you'll make it a success.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. Well, I managed with this one, you know. We've already been around for 6 years, so I don't see why not, you know.
Yeah.
But I tell you, the most amazing thing, and even for me, even though I've been actually doing it and creating it, is the amazing feeling of how something goes from a thought, from an idea, to something
to
concrete.
Reality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that you can see and feel and touch and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's an amazing thing, you know. So sometimes I step back and I go, yeah, you know, I'm pretty cool.
Yeah, step back, take a look, and a deep breath, like, wow,
yeah,
I did this.
Exactly, you know. So it's a good feeling, you know, and we'll see what happens. You know, at least it's given me something to do now, you know, because this station runs itself pretty much. So mm-hmm. I found that I have a lot of free time and stuff. So this kept me busy.
Well, you definitely haven't had a lot of free time the past week,
right,
couple
exactly.
weeks or however long.
Not even time to sleep, you know. I mean, last night I could have gone to sleep at midnight. Still, I went to sleep at 2:30, you know. So
head
it just,
was, mind
yeah.
was going.
And there's still a lot to do, you know.
Yeah.
So you said you didn't sleep much either?
No, I was on... I was interviewing on the red carpet last night for a movie, From the Rough. It's
that's
starring,
the name of it?
Yeah, that's okay. the name of it, starring Taraji P. Henson and the late Michael Clark Duncan.
Okay.
And it was a really good night. Got some great interviews. It's a really interesting storyline. It's about, it's based on a true story, and it was very cool because the lady who it's based on was there too, so we got to interview her. Nice. It's about... She's called Katana Starks, and she was the first African-American collegiate men's coach, period.
Really?
It was a golf team.
Wow.
But first African-American female head coach.
Yeah.
So it's a story about her, and it's just about women empowerment. I kept saying this last night. Is it women empowerment or woman empowerment? Neither sounds right.
You can say it both, I think. But, yeah, I think you can say it both. You're right.
But you get what I mean.
Neither sounds right.
Yeah, neither sound
yeah.
right.
Okay.
But it's about that. And really, when you put your mind to something, you can achieve what you want. Because she had to go through a lot of obstacles and a lot of people saying no to her. Everyone, even the NCAA,
really,
saying
a lot of rejection.
Yeah, a lot of rejection. But
because
she succeeded.
You have to deal with your race and your gender too.
Exactly.
So it's like two things.
It's
you
two
know?
Things. Yeah.
Wow.
So that was it. Was a lot of fun, but I'm busy in the process of uploading onto the company's YouTube and web. So I've been up for.
It was
a late night and an early morning.
So you've been working.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But it's all part of the job and I enjoy it, so.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. So, yeah, but, you know, I mean, the thing is, so you feel pretty awake now, right?
I've had a lot of coffee.
Yeah.
A lot of coffee and not enough food, so I'm a little shaky.
Yeah.
I need to go get, I'm in the mood for fast food, obviously.
Yeah.
I need to get something to keep me going because I have another interview that I'm doing tonight at 8 p.m. So I have a long time to keep going today.
Yeah. Well, I admire you. I mean, you keep busy. You're doing a lot of different things, and that's cool. You know, that's how you advance yourself. And, you know, I mean, we've had people either on the show or people that I've met that move here, and they want to be in entertainment and whatever, mm-hmm. and they won't do anything else, you know? So they just sit around. They leave. You know, they live like poor people because mm-hmm. they don't have a lot of money. And, and you wonder why. Why are you so lazy? You know, go and do things, you know? And even if it's not related to your career, you know, go do something, you know?
Right.
So a lot of people just like, one day they get up in the morning, they're saying, hey, I'm an actor and I'm not going to do any other work, you know?
Yeah.
And in the meantime, they don't do any work in acting either, you know?
Hollywood definitely separates a lot of people because a lot of people do. Even some of my friends come here and they have all these dreams, but they don't really do much about it.
Right.
And it's a tough place to make it. So it really does separate the people and you don't get handed anything
right.
on a plate, which again, some people think that you probably do.
Right.
All my friends in Florida and in England think I have this glamorous lifestyle.
Yeah.
They have no idea.
It's Hollywood.
It's not so glamorous.
Yeah, well, but you don't have a bad life either.
No,
you know?
Definitely
That's
not.
That's the thing.
No.
I mean, you're happy here, right?
I am very happy.
Yeah, so you do have a glamorous life, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe you're not like... who are the big stars today? I don't know. Lindsay
Ransick,
Lohan.
That's who
yeah.
I... Those, the people that are... Maria Menounos.
Right.
People that are big reporters that have made it, that are successful in what they do, but also elegant and stand by what they think.
Yeah.
Those are the people I look up to.
Well, I definitely see you as a Maria Menounos caliber, you know, if you keep doing this. Yeah, no, really. And maybe we'll see you at the Grove one day doing Extra or whatever that show is. Is it Extra?
Yeah, it is Extra. Hopefully.
Did you ever go there to see it being shot on the set?
You know, I haven't. And they also shoot at Universal. Oh. That's where their main studio is. But I haven't been on. No, I haven't been and watched.
Yeah. Maybe you should. They should invite you on the set. Well, actually, you don't have to be invited. No, all the people are just watching there. Yeah.
I've been to Jimmy Kimmel. I've been to a couple of the talk shows. And I love going to those. They're so funny.
Yeah.
Especially Jimmy Kimmel's probably my favorite.
Really?
Yeah. He's hilarious. Okay. But he's naturally hilarious.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel too forced.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you
like
just kind of look at him and you laugh.
Right? Yeah. I like to go into live screenings of things.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Sounds good. Awesome. Yeah. All right. Well, let's see what else. I just have to tell you this. I totally forgot, but... Last night, I'm like, you know, it's like 11, 12 at night, and I got hungry. So I had bought these, noodles that you can make quickly in the microwave and stuff. You know, I guess it's this new thing, whatever. So I got this, like, I don't know. I didn't even, when I bought it at the store, I didn't even notice what it was. I just thought, what the heck, I'll try it. It looks good, you know. So, like, if you want to grab something in 5 minutes. So I bought this, and I didn't even realize what flavor it is. So I prepared it. I'm sitting down. I'm starting to eat it. And after a few bites, I'm starting to feel it's really, like, spicy, you know?
Uh-huh.
So, and I keep eating because I'm reading. I'm not paying attention to what I'm eating, right? A couple minutes later, Charlotte, I was so, like, burning. My whole mouth was burning. My tongue, my lips.
Your lips. That's the worst, when your lips sting
Your lips
so
and
much.
Even inside my mouth. And I'm, like, rushing to the water. I'm, like, starting to wash everything and gargle and stuff. Nothing. I put stuff in my mouth to eat. It made it worse. I drank. It made it worse. I didn't know what to do anymore. And it went on like this for about 10, 15 minutes.
Oh,
and I'm going, oh, my God. I've never eaten anything this spicy before.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's the worst feeling. And I can't think. There's something I know that, well, obviously it's not going to help me because I can't remember what it is. But there's one specific thing you should eat that neutralizes everything when your mouth's on fire like that. But I can't think what it is.
Okay.
I'll get back to you
on that. Maybe margarine or something. I can think anything that's cold, like maybe sour cream or something, you know, might actually make it a little better.
Ooh, sour cream sounds good.
But yeah, so then I looked at the package. Sure enough, spicy chicken, you know. But who would have thought it'd be that? Spicy.
Especially when you see something like spicy chicken noodles, you don't think crazy spicy.
Yeah.
You kind of just think it might have a little kick.
Yeah, you know, yeah, I can stand spicy food, but this was ridiculous. I've never had anything that spicy.
extra spicy.
It was funny. It was like almost a cartoon. I felt like starting to run around the house.
That's
the
funny.
Smoke coming out of my mouth or something.
I can picture that.
Yeah. So when you go to the store, always make sure you look at the label.
Definitely.
Yeah. All right. Well, we have a what promises to be a fascinating guest in the studio, and her name is Monica Parker. Welcome to the show, Monica.
Thank you.
Yes. So you are. You don't actually live in LA, right?
Well, I live here half the time. I live in Toronto half the time.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Is Toronto has it been your home from the beginning?
No, not from the beginning. I was born in Glasgow, Scotland, just to confuse you.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. So you guys are like closer than
you
would
think. Oh,
very
cool. I'm from England.
Yeah. My dad was from Wolverhampton.
Oh, really? I'm from Sheffield.
There you go. Close. Pretty close.
Yeah.
Really? Uh-huh. Wow, that's pretty cool. You see, and you meet in the United States.
I know. It's
so that's
crazy.
A cool thing
it's
to do.
A very
and
small
in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Right.
So what was it like growing up in Scotland?
Well, I left when I was 13.
Okay.
So it felt pretty normal.
But you were born there, right? So you were speaking like a Scottish person and everything.
I actually talked like this. This is exactly how I sounded.
Really?
I had a great Scottish accent.
Yeah, wow.
But I was just born there. My mother was an Austrian, Austro-Hungarian. My dad was English. And they met. My mother sought out a husband.
Uh-huh.
She had been previously married and had two grown children. And I think it was, but because of the war, my brother was actually in Auschwitz and survived.
Wow.
And so after the war, my mother... refound her both her kids. She had they were gone, and had to bring them into Glasgow, Scotland. So she needed a husband in order to become legal. So my poor father, who was a mild-mannered Englishman, didn't quite know what hit him.
Wow.
The Austro-Hungarian Empress.
Yeah. So she was married at the time?
No, no, she was divorced.
Okay, and then she met this guy, and he didn't. Okay,
she was totally divorced.
No, well, yeah, that's what I thought. She had one husband, and then she looked for another to be able to get married.
No, she had one that didn't work out, and then she had my father who didn't work out.
Okay,
it's all good.
Okay,
but I'm here.
Yeah, you're here.
Yeah, well, for sure.
So you left there at 13.
I came to Toronto because my half sister got married to a doctor and moved to Toronto, and my mother felt that she had spent enough time away from her daughter. So we went, my mother and I, on a holiday. We took a ship across the Atlantic and got to Canada. And my mother arrived in the New World and said, "Oh, we're moving here." And then we went back to Scotland. And my father, who didn't live with her anymore, said, "I don't think so.
Wow.
You can't take my daughter out of the country." Wow. And my mother, it took her another 2 years to convince him that they should start over. She lied. Yeah. And
anything for your kids, though.
Wow.
I mean, right?
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then they came to Toronto, and it was sort of the first time I'd ever lived with my parents when I was 13, because they had been separated literally from the time I was born.
Wow.
And it was, you know, if you've not lived with somebody, and then you do, it was like my father was this nice man, but he didn't feel like my father, really.
Yeah.
Right.
And they lived together for a year, and it was probably the worst year of my life.
Really?
Yeah, because they weren't happy together, and I had been used to a happy mother, and when I saw my father, he was a happy man, and when they were together, it was combustible.
Wow. So this was in Toronto?
In Toronto.
So your mom did a good job of convincing your dad to
My mother was a force of nature. She was.
Wow.
Wow.
That's interesting.
So this was around the time of the war?
No. Post-war.
Yeah. I mean,
post-war.
None of us are that old.
No. Yeah. But I'm just, circumstances led to this.
The
war circumstances led to everything.
Do you have any other siblings or just the one sister?
I have
a
half-brother and a half-sister.
I see.
But other than that, I'm an only child from this particular...
From your parents, your natural parents. Wow, that's really interesting. So, you know, I'm going wow to someone who just said her parents have been divorced. But you know what? It's the same with my son. You know, I mean, he was 6 months when I got divorced the first time. And so he really hadn't known what it was like to live with both parents. And then a few years later, we actually got back. You know, in hindsight, or even then, I knew it wasn't because I still loved her, but I just wanted to live with the kids. So we got back together for 3 years. But yeah, we combusted too. Yeah.
It seems to be a fairly common story.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is, you know. And I got to tell you, though, that, you know, when I was faced with the divorce and realizing that I would not get the kids because fathers don't get such a great opportunity to.
Yeah.
I was devastated. I really was. For a couple of years, I didn't know what to do. I went to live in Israel for a year around my family for support and stuff. But I was devastated by it, you know, and because I never imagined that I would live with my kids all my life, you know. And the thing is, I feel that although I was involved in their lives, like I still see them once, twice a week. And we are close, but it's not the same as when you live with them. You know?
Yeah.
But conversely, as a child of divorce, I was happier when my parents were apart.
Yeah.
Because they were happier.
Right. And that's what they say.
I was too.
That's why they say don't stay together for the kids, because it's not really going to help, you know. So, you know, when you're apart, you can see each other at their best, you know. And I think there's something to it, you know. So it's not all bad. Wow. So what was Toronto for you? I mean, you moved at 13. It must be pretty hard, right? A teenager.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I came to Toronto. There were so many reasons that it was bad. A, I had a Scottish accent.
Uh-huh.
And
nobody could understand.
Well, no, they could understand. But I was.
You felt
when
self-conscious
you're 13,
about
you want
it.
To be like everybody else.
Oh,
right?
Tell me. I came here at 16 so and I felt I wasn't like yeah. anybody else.
So I was 13. I had an accent. We moved. My mother habitually moved us into the richest neighborhood she could find because you meet the best people.
Yeah.
And
because
so
she could,
would
right?
say. And then I would say, but what if they're faking too? And so there was.
Fake it till you make it, you know?
So, I was poor, I was had an accent, and I was fat, and I was only half Jewish. So, and it was a Jewish neighborhood.
Oh, wow.
So on every level, I sort of tried to figure out, how do I make this work?
Yeah, like, who am I? What am I? And that's a young age to do that.
But I think everybody is different, but I think if you have a personality that is tenacious and the things that make you crazy or make you unhappy, for me, they were the first indicator that I was a fighter, that I was going to find my place, that I was going to find my people. And I don't think there was a conscious idea that I was a fighter.
Right.
I now know that in hindsight, that I don't take to no very well.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't like no.
I know. Well, not many people do, but it's also good to be able to say no. You know, some people
Definitely.
Don't know how to say no.
I struggle with saying no.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine with your personality, I think you'd be, you know, pretty timid to say no and probably try to please everyone and
yeah,
stuff, right?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Well, that's your lesson in life. You
I
see,
know.
That's a thing.
I need to say no.
Yeah. I learned eventually in my life that the reason you're here or what you need to work out the most is what is hardest for you to do, mm-hmm. you know. And, you know, whether you're shy or, you know, things like that, you know, that's what you need to work on. You know, that's your probably test in life, you know.
Yeah.
That's why you're here, because it's hard for you.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, at any rate, so you don't like no for an answer. And
In the way that no inspires me to push forward.
So you're tenacious. I mean, you,
yeah.
you want something and you go after it.
I think that any time someone gives you a closed door, and you know that saying, if a door closes, open a window. I think, okay, if a window doesn't open, I'll rip up a floorboard. I mean, it feels a little bit like a challenge to me.
Yeah.
Because if I believe that I really want something and I think I'm right for it, I think I have to find a way to get that. And you clearly do that.
Yeah.
You learned that at a young age, because I know it was probably when I... probably like mid-college when I was like 19 that I really started to figure this out and realize you have to work hard and
right.
not everything's going to go your way. But I mean, learning that at 13.
But you both talked about that. I mean, people who come here all the time and the mm-hmm. planes, the buses, the trains unload with people who are, you know, think that they're... it's just there.
Right.
Yeah. It's like a field.
Yeah.
A field of actors, a field of... and you get to just plant yourself.
Yeah,
it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
Money trees here and everything, right?
Uh-huh.
Right?
And
yeah.
I mean, I've lived here for more than 25 years full time.
Oh, wow.
And then recently we moved back to Canada because we have aging family and we wanted to be there. And that's why we split our time now.
I see.
But it is, without a doubt, you have to... your luck is what you make.
Right.
Yes.
That's
true. There's no question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know Toronto, now thinking about it, I had a long-distance relationship with a woman I actually had a relationship with in South Africa when I lived there. But then she moved to Toronto. And so I went to visit a couple times, and I did notice they have a big Jewish community there. And there's also a lot of immigrants to Toronto, too. I know a lot of people from South Africa, from Australia, from Britain, and places
they
like that.
They say that Toronto is the most multicultural city now in the world, more than New York.
Really?
Wow.
Well,
yeah.
I'm not surprised.
I mean, when I left, it was a pretty, white, black, pretty simple. There wasn't, it wasn't a huge immigrant population. There was an immigrant population, but it was very segregated. Now it looks like a ribbon.
Really?
Oh, it's fascinating. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, when you see the doors open of schools and you see all this mixed everything
yeah.
come
the different colors. Awesome. And, yeah.
and I, it's the way of the world,
That's
I think.
True. That's
Definitely.
True. So you sort of like eventually found your place there in school and in your social circles and things like that. What was it like growing up for you? You mentioned you were overweight and everything. Did that create a problem for you early on?
I would be lying if I said it didn't, but I didn't want it to. So, again, you posture as you're as though you're fine. I mean, that was at least what I did.
Shoulders back, head up.
Yes. And my mother, who was a pretty successful couturier, she was a dressmaker for a very high end. And so she had a shop in a very fashionable area of Toronto. So I grew up in this area where at that time it was much more unique than it is now, just because I think people were a lot more unique in the 70s and
right.
the 80s. Uh-huh. And so being big, just being, but I was also big blonde and uh-huh. lipsticked. you know, I loved clothes. I, you know, had an energy. In fact, in the and there was a television station. I got my start. I'm all over the place. Let me try and sort my out my head. This, you're talking about morning. Here's me. So what happened? My mother was a dress designer. I had a natural artistic bent, so I always was going to be a dress designer, and that's what I did. I went to school to be that, and I worked for my mother as a dress designer. But because her shop was in an area that was the sort of where the movie industry was and where all of the artists lived, I met a lot of people in that world. It was just the world I lived in, and all my best friends were models. No peer pressure on me.
Yeah, no, not at all.
Well. And of course, one of my boyfriends was a model. I mean, I wanted to make my life as difficult as possible.
Yeah.
And then it was organic that somebody came into my shop. One of the models brought a guy into the store who was doing his thesis movie, and he needed dresses for his movie. And I said, sure, you can have them if I can have the lead. And he said, no, but you could be a hooker. And I went, oh, okay. And that was Ivan Reitman.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, really. Wow. So I did my first movie with him, and Eugene Levy was serving the coffee on the set, and
really?
It was the inmates running the asylum for sure. But the minute I was on this movie set, dressed as a hooker, but sitting around on a lawn with a lot of hookers who were all just normal actors, people, right. And I went, this is the circus I belong in. I love this weird sort of play that's going on.
Uh-huh.
And then after that, a television station opened up that was a unique cable station. And I went down and sold them on the idea of me doing an exercise show. And the only person I knew in the business was Ivan, so he directed it for me. And Dan Aykroyd had his first job as the announcer for this show. And I wore a black leotard and had long blonde hair and I was very flexible and could do back bends. And
wow.
It was a pretty awesome show. And I would have experts on the show who talked about weight issues and all kinds of things. So it was a fun show, but it had a serious side. And it got me a lot of publicity at a very young age.
How old are you right now?
None of your business.
No, I meant like right now in the story.
oh, I was young. I was like 24.
My question is, why do women don't like to be asked their age? And I never can figure it out, because the thing is this. First of all, for the most part, people look their age, you know, so you can guess. Yeah. And secondly, why be ashamed of your age? I mean, the thing is, everybody ages, right? So it's not something to be shameful of.
I don't think it's that. I don't. I think that we're all in a business where the minute you have an identifying anything, there's a mental picture that goes with that. And I don't think we deserve that. I don't.
Right.
I think age is energy.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I don't think it has anything to do with shame or not shame. I think it's just about a need to keep earning a living.
Right. Yeah, but I mean,
agree with you, because people have, as soon as you say something about, oh, I'm 60 years old, it's like, in some people's mind, it's like, oh, you're old.
Right.
And it's different negative connotations that go when,
and it depends
when you reach a certain age, no matter how you think about it. Some people will think of it negatively, some people won't.
Right.
But someone who's hiring you is 29,
right,
which happens a lot.
Right.
You know, you just want to sort of just hope that your personality will push you across and
okay,
not
but that's
sort of
the thing, though. I mean, but they can still figure out your age. So to, you know, so I don't understand that. But that's our society. I mean, I get it. So at any rate, so you started. So let's go back to school now. You said your friends were models and everything. Were you bullied at all because of your weight?
I think I was taunted more than bullied.
Right.
But I also have a sense of humor. So, you know, and it was a mask, no question. When I was younger, it was a mask. I used it as a deflective way of getting things off me.
Right.
So I would make jokes about me before anybody else could, so that that was taken care of.
Oh, wow.
You know,
yeah.
And for me, it was done. By, if I said, okay, so I'm fat, so what? Now what? What are you going to say to me?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You sort of disarmed them. Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah.
But I'm really, I feel like I'm really lucky in that way, because I'm essentially pretty strong.
I was about to say, you're a very strong person, well, and it's people that, because bullies prey on weak people.
Right.
But when they know that you're such a strong person, nothing's going to, even if it does inside, on the outside, you're not going to show that it bothers them.
As you said, you fake it until you know, we don't start out as strong people.
Yeah.
You know, my thick skin was developed pretty young. You know,
yeah,
that I weighed 6.5 pounds when I was born, and 1 hour later I weighed 62 pounds. But I was that baby that everybody, you know, chubby babies. Everybody loves chubby babies. And then you become a chubby child, and people don't love chubby children.
No, huh?
And so you learn, I mean, you don't really know that when everybody loves you as a baby, you're not really conscious. You just, you know that people are liking you.
Yeah.
But when you're a chubby child and family members or people begin to say things, you either develop a thick skin to protect yourself, or you become an open wound and where it'll all hurt you. So
you get a complex.
I was very good at layering on whatever I needed to protect me.
Right.
But does it protect you? I mean, you become
As a kid,
more
it does,
aware.
I think.
I think it does when you're very young, and then you become a teenager, and it does. There's nothing that will protect you.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Huh? I mean, you're totally exposed.
Yes, because we're all, I don't know any teenager, beautiful, not beautiful, who doesn't feel fragile and unworthy and scared. And so the most insecure are the most obnoxious, because they need it the most.
Definitely.
It's all of that stuff.
Right? Yeah, that's true. So then you went to high school and everything. How did it go there?
Well, by the time I was in high school, I was notorious for having a party every weekend.
Really?
Well, my mother was a single mother.
Uh-huh.
She was a bridge player, and she was a big deal bridge player, so she was never home.
Yeah.
And she worked every day. And my, you know, sister and brother by then were long time married with grown, my nieces and nephews are closer to my age than my sister and brother are.
Wow.
And so I was alone a lot, and I hated being alone. So I came home, there would never be anybody home, and I would have this ritual where I would, because I was scared, I would stand outside and I would call out and I would say, if anyone's in the house, you've got 3 minutes. And then I'd go in and I'd fling open every door to make sure there was no one behind it. And the first thing I'd do is I'd stop in the kitchen and get a large knife.
Wow.
And then I'd walk through every room, flinging open doors and looking in closets. And once I was sure there was no one there, then I would, you know, go get some food.
Right. And but that's a terrible thing for a kid to have to go through.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it was the way it is. You know, my mother had to work. She made a living. She was a single mother.
Right.
And
you don't know any different.
Yeah.
And
so at that point, you had to become even stronger, even thicker skin and stuff. So your story is a story of survival. I mean, the thing is, you weren't obviously handed the good life on a plate, you know, on a silver plate.
No,
so you
and
had
it was
to,
right
you've
outside
had to
my
work
door
for it.
Because we lived, as I said, in those wealthy neighborhoods.
Right.
And so I liken it to a bakery where there's the best cakes and you can see them through the glass, but you can't get them. And if that doesn't piss off a fat person, I don't know what does.
Whoa.
So it was like that with my neighborhood, too. And then, you know, my mother was never home on weekends because she played bridge. So I had these massive parties. And I mean, literally the kind of parties, risky business parties, where cars would pull up and they'd be unloading more and more kids. I mean, to this day, people come up to me and say, oh, I used to go to your parties. And I said, I'm sure you did. Everybody else did.
Yeah.
The neighbors would complain. And this was my mother's response. They would say, the noise is unbearable. She said, that's fine. That means everything's good. If it gets quiet in our house, call me.
Yeah. So, Monica, you wrote a book.
I did.
And it's called Getting Wasted, W-A-I-S-T, A Survival Guide to Being Fat in a Society That Loves Thin. And the first thing is that I noticed you're free with the word fat, and I think that's a good thing because it shows you you accept yourself and you accept the way society is. But at the same time, you wrote a book to show women or people in general that they can actually make it in life without being thin.
I would hate to think that you couldn't. I mean, mm-hmm. and I do understand that I'm sitting right here in Hollywood, where there's a certain standard of beauty. And I came here when it's already been broken down a bit by the Melissa McCarthy's and the idea of Adele and all these, you know, stunning, striking women, Rebel Wilson in her own way, whoever they are, and men too. So I think there's room for talent and the talent plus perseverance. And, you know, there's never going to be just one thing, nor should there be, but it's gotten a bit better. But for me, dealing with the word fat, you know, it's not my favorite word, but I don't want it to become a word that I can't say and use.
Right. And it shouldn't be used as an insult either. You
I
know
don't think
I
mean? It is.
It's an adjective, you know. And that's the thing, though, is that I think as kids, they use it to demean people, and then you grow older and it stays with you.
Yeah.
I think that we can be beautiful and beautiful, attractive, interesting, no matter what we look like. For me, it's about putting it together well so that mm-hmm. you get that. That's a certain vanity that I think we should all have because it's personal. It says that you have self-love, that you like yourself enough to get it together before you leave the house. But I also think we are all chipped and dented, and I don't know anybody who's comes through life unscathed.
No, I mean, that's why we're here, because we're not perfect. That's why life is created in the first place. That's my belief.
I believe it too, and I also think not being perfect, and there is no such thing anyway, because even if you are perfect, that old age thing will take care
right.
of that.
Right, absolutely.
So being, it's all a gift. Everything that you come up against, you talked about in the earlier segment about a coach, the black coach who was the first sports mm-hmm. coach. She had to have had a sense of herself that was really
Definitely.
Clear, really strong, and she was going to fight to get what she wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, adversity is the gift that keeps on giving.
That's true.
Definitely.
That's nice.
In the book, you start every chapter with a diet or something that you've mm-hmm. done to try and lose weight, and then
yes.
you end up putting it back on. Why do you start each chapter with that?
Well, first of all, I think it's a great delineation of what, A, how many diets there are in the world.
So
and
true.
Mine is only a rough sampling. And I've done so many. And I thought it was interesting because it was true that whatever the diet was, and the more, sometimes they were really extreme because they sounded like a good idea at the time. And so I start with what they are, how much they cost, how much weight I lost on them, and how much weight I gained as soon as I stopped them. Not because I suddenly started eating like a crazy person, but because you can't sustain a starvation lifestyle. Your
yeah.
body will, the true instinct of your body's survival is that it will stop having you lose weight. People say they reach right. plateaus. That's your body screaming out that enough.
Yeah.
You're trying
yeah.
to starve me, and mm-hmm. it's unnatural for it to do that. So,
yeah. And people are so preoccupied with diets. It's probably like the biggest industry in the world, I think. And but, you know, the thing is that my question is, I mean, you mentioned you were born you know, a chubby baby and everything, and you grew up all your life, you don't really know what it would have been like to be thin. So my question is...
I have fantasized.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, I fantasized about a lot of things too, that I was Brad Pitt, but that was depressing in the morning when I got up. But at any rate, to you, that's like your natural state. Would a diet help? I mean, the thing is, it seems like your body is more comfortable at a certain weight.
That's what I have come to understand. And I mean, it's not like I'm on the extreme side. And right. this is the sort of sadness. When I look back on at photographs of me when I was 20, I wasn't that. I was a little bit heavy. I wasn't even heavy. I had been on so many diets already. I mean, I was put on diet pills at 13.
Wow.
Which made me a little jittery. Right. But so I have had so much focus on it, and I was good at it. I'm really good at dieting because it's so regimented. You have no way of breaking free. I'm actually mm-hmm. better at this is different now because I have found balance, but I used to be better at dieting than I ever was living in the real world.
Yeah.
And that's why we gain weight. And I'm not untypical of this. This is the way it is. You all these diets will work no matter how insane they are. And some of them are damn dangerous. And I've been on at least 3 or 4 really dangerous diets, but I didn't know it at the time.
Yeah.
And sometimes the medical industry didn't know it until after the fact, and people had died on them. Yeah. The lessons that I have learned as an adult is that what we put into our body is really important, and I don't eat badly at all. I mean, I'm a pretty clean eater, but it's taken a long time for me to come to understand what fuel and food is versus what emotional eating is.
Right, like overeating and things
Well,
like
emotional
that.
Eating, just to, when you're, or
comfort
boredom eating,
food.
Or all of those, mm-hmm. you know, instead of understanding food and what it does for you, which I didn't.
Yeah.
Do you find it almost scary the way, the diets that there are that people go on these days? And it's not just people being overweight and trying to diet. It's the other way around. It's people starving themselves to try and look a certain way that they think is perfect.
Thigh gap? Anybody? Thigh gap? What mm-hmm. the hell? I mean, really, this is now important. This is we have a very, very messed up mentality when it comes to beauty and food.
Yeah.
And you talk about an industry that is worth billions of dollars in making us feel badly mm-hmm. about what we look like. It's absolutely focused on letting you know that your eyelashes aren't thick enough, you don't have thigh gap, you know, whatever it is, there's no part of you that they can't exploit. There's an app for that. God forbid it would be Appetite. really, and I think we've become so out of balance that we don't know how to eat without being neurotic.
Yeah.
And the neuroses around food, and that's what I see in young women, more than anything, is that they're picking at greens and they're eating kale endlessly. When did kale become, you know, now we must all munch on kale. Really, people? How about some other food, too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, just add in a few things.
And juice diets.
Oh.
And that's all you see in L.A. is juice
juicing,
bars.
Juicing, juicing. But this is the fad of now, and this too shall pass, and then there'll be a new one.
Uh-huh.
But it is, when you see people who have done, I can't remember the name of the diet, but the one where it's a feeding tube. Have you seen that thing?
Oh, my
gosh,
God.
No.
Oh, yeah, they're living on a feeding tube because they want to lose weight before an award show or whatever it is. I mean, I did some pretty bizarre diets.
I would imagine. You know, I think you probably, after many diets don't work for you, would probably get pretty desperate and try to hang on to anything that might promise, you know, lower weight. Now, usually it's like, emotional eating is like bulimia and anorexia, or those are the results of emotional eating, right?
Some people become bulimic, some people become anorexic because they're of whatever stress, strain, life, I think there's so many reasons that people adopt some kind of non-eating or overeating mm-hmm. pattern.
Right.
Mine was, first of all, I like food.
Yeah.
So there's that. I do. It's celebratory. It's fun to be with people. I like to cook. I like to share. Mm-hmm. And so food is part of that culture. And I come from a culture that is about sharing food.
Yeah, food.
And it's nice.
I mean, many cultures are like that. You know, I don't know if you ever watch The Sopranos, but almost every scene is around food. Mm-hmm. You know, go on.
But so there's the pleasure factor of sharing great conversation, great food, and having people sit around. And I really do think that's fantastic. But when I was younger and it was loneliness and being alone a lot, there's a kind of sort of mental emptiness that goes on sometimes, and you're just eating. You don't even know you're eating. You don't know what you're tasting.
Right.
You don't know what you're eating. You just know you need to sort of fill that hole. And that's such an unhealthy mm-hmm. eating. It's right. mindless.
Yeah.
Mindless eating. And that would be the difference between this me and that me. I actually am mindful right. about what I eat. And it doesn't mean I don't want to celebrate, and I still do. I love a dinner party. There's nothing better than having a great night surrounded by friends.
Yeah, right.
in my
there
life.
Isn't.
Mm-hmm. So I see now, this is something I say in the book, I think because of this craziness that people, there's no meal that you don't see, people on their phones, on their texting, while barely eating something green, picking, not knowing what they're eating, not sharing, not talking. Amongst each other. And then on top of that, there's no grace with food anymore. I think we need to get back to just a little bit of balance and some grace. I think mm-hmm. it's a beautiful way to remember that where food comes from.
Right.
Definitely.
That's true. That's true.
It's alive. It's we mm-hmm. if we're going to kill animals to eat them, we may as well respect the fact and take a moment before we put it in our mouth.
Right.
So, sorry, Sam. So the book is a message just to be comfortable with who you are?
It's about acceptance. Mm-hmm. It's funny. And the book is overall, I would say, funny with some pretty heavy dips every so often into the right. truth. But it is funny, and it's just the way I look at life. And the message is absolutely about self-acceptance. Right. And that more than anything, if you don't love yourself, nobody else can love you.
I always say that because it's so true. How can you expect someone else to love you if you don't love everything about you?
Right. But my question is, and I wondered about that, is if it's true that, you want to lose the weight and everything, but at the same time, you keep eating, you know? I mean, the thing is that those diets don't work. It seems like they don't work.
They don't work.
How come?
Well, because, again, the minute you they do work. If it's about losing weight, any diet that takes out calories will allow you to drop pounds. Mm-hmm. But the mental and emotional component and being able to sustain that in the real world becomes nearly impossible.
Right. Right.
And you can't stay on a diet your whole life. That's how you will become anorexic.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So what happens is there's no diet that – they all offer a quick fix. Every diet offers that. You know, this is the fast one. This is the one. You mm-hmm. can lose this much weight. And you can. But at what cost to your emotional and healthy well-being? So I'm not anti-diet. I think if you want to lose a few pounds, then lose a few pounds.
Right.
Like, go on a diet if you have to for a short period of time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I was a cereal dieter. And that just sends you into a yo-yo cycle where you right. lose weight, gain weight. And that's unhealthier than anything else that you can do.
Yeah.
So what I am now is a person who doesn't diet, but I eat differently.
Right.
And I'm healthier and I'm pretty fit. I mean, I walk and do yoga and do lots of things. And
mm-hmm.
I'm not saying anybody should be fat. My body, which seems to come from a long line of European peasants, says that I am not intended to be thin.
Okay.
And I've come to understand
that.
You know,
yeah.
I have a better fighting weight than I do. I mean, I don't like being heavy. I know what works, what I'm comfortable with. And
right.
if nothing aches, I'm doing well.
Right.
Awesome.
And it's a lifestyle change. It's
yeah.
not, that's what you have to do. It's not a quick fix diet that's, you cut out everything that you need to work and function right. Because most people, when they go on diets, they're so tired. They have no energy because
right.
they're just, I mean, when you cut out
eating.
Carbs, like yeah. if you cut out carbs altogether, I mean, yeah, you get energy from protein and everything else. But I mean, the main source of energy is from carbohydrates. And when you cut that out, it takes a toll on your body.
Right.
It's like what the old people
yeah.
say, a little of this, a little of that, and you'll be
yeah.
fine.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's interesting to me is that we are living in a world, and we're here, in Los Angeles, where there is a certain standard of beauty. But we are living, if you just look at America, they have never been fatter, never. Yeah. And on really on a bad scale. And so I think we are so out of harmony and out of balance, and the stress levels that people are living in. There's two parents are working all the time. There's no one home. There's a lot going on in the world that's scary, right. And it's all at our internet, so that we can absorb it relentlessly. So I think there's a lot of people who are scared.
Yeah.
And so they're just shoving food into their face. And also there's no money. Yeah. And a lot of people who don't have money are eating the worst kind of foods.
And that's a problem, because fast food is so cheap.
Right.
Fatty food is so cheap.
And the cost of what it will do to your body, and also all that stuff, I'm not saying anything new here, but if you never walk down the center aisles of your grocery store, you're better off.
Yeah. Well, Monica, I have to interrupt you because we are out of time.
No!
You're fascinating. You'll have to come back and we'll talk some more, because it sounds
great.
Like your book is fascinating. Monica Parker, the book is Getting Wasted, A Survival Guide to Being Fat in a Society That Loves Thin. And I think it says it all. Do you have a website too?
I do. Thanks for asking. www.gettingwasted.com.
Awesome.
Thank you
so much.
Is that all you have to promote? Are you signing books, anything?
Signing books. I just had a huge book signing at Barnes & Noble. Oh. I'm on my way to several bookstores today to sign more books. And I think I'm going to go to the UK. That's what we're hoping for. To do a book signing there. So
awesome.
I can be amongst my old people.
Yeah?
Yeah,
awesome.
Definitely.
Okay, Monica, well, all the best to you. Congratulations with the book and everything.
Thank
I know you'll
you
do
so
very
much.
Well
Thank
because
you.
It's a very relevant topic always, So thank you for joining us. Charlotte, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody, for listening, and see you tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte. Right here on LA Talk Radio.